All right, my name is Rick Bradley, and I'm in Wichita, Kansas, and today is December the 5th, 1994, and this tape is for the Society for American Baseball Research's Oral History Committee, and I'm sitting here today with Ken Johnson. Ken, when you played, you had the nickname of Hook. Now, how'd you get that?
I understand that. Well, apparently, I had a decent curveball, if I could throw it. And that, I think, several people had decided that I should be, you know, have a neat name of Hook. Tommy Bridges was a great, great curveball player in Detroit, way before my time, but he was saying that a curveball should be thrown like a pitcher reaching out and pulling the blind down with the two fingers. And that was how he threw the curveball, and that's how I tried to throw it. So that's the story on that.
Mm-hmm. You were born in Topeka?
Topeka, Kansas.
And that's where you grew up?
That's right.
Well, tell me about growing up in Topeka.
Oh, dear. Well, I did grow up in Topeka. Played, like all the other youngsters, you know, was on the football team and the baseball team and the basketball team. And went through Topeka High School. There was nothing great that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I put in my time, I guess. Yes.
What did your dad do?
My dad worked for Topeka Temp Mining Company. And that was in a very, very severe year, or years, in that he still had a job working for Topeka Temp Mining Company. So we were not in a situation where my father or mother did not have a job and they were in bad, bad straits. We were still in pretty bad straits with my father having a job, but we were much better off than a lot of people.
You played baseball in high school. Did you play any sandlot ball or any American Legion or any town team?
American Legion, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, we did play American Legion ball. And I think went to the quarterfinals one year in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And played there. And I was a first baseman, but I did throw a couple of games at that tournament, and we won. And then, of course, lost on the third day or something to some outfit in, I think, San Diego, California.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, that's what happened.
So you're just a pitcher, outfielder, when you were a kid, first baseman. Did you play in the outfield, or?
Well, when I was in the Army, I had to play in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had too many ball players. That's all I could do.
Growing up, did you have a favorite ball player or a favorite ball team that you followed?
Well, being in living in Topeka, Kansas, and all, and most everybody in that area listened to Harry Carey announce the St. Louis Cardinal baseball games. So I was invited to go to St. Louis and be interviewed by Branch Rickey, and played minor league ball with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
I'll tell you what, we'll come back to the Branch Rickey story in just a second, but what did your family think about you making baseball a career?
My family ties were somewhat a little loose. And they thought, they thought that was a great idea. Go ahead and play. So that's what I did.
Well, tell me, how'd you get invited to go to St. Louis to see to get an interview with Branch Rickey, and then tell me about how you got signed?
Well, in playing minor league, or not minor league, but just playing sandlot ball or American Legion ball, Connie Poirier knew one of the scouts who was our coach, Connie Poirier. He knew one of the St. Louis coaches, minor league coaches, or prospect coaches,
mm-hmm.
at the time, and I guess they came to Topeka and watched me play or something and said, well, this is fine, let's try and sign him up. That's what happened there.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the name of the, was it a scout that signed you, or? Was it the minor league coach that wound up signing you, or do you remember how that happened?
Nope. I remember the coach drove us, my father and myself, to St. Louis for a meeting with Branch Rickey.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that was the finder or the scout, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. What did you know about Branch Rickey before you actually got to meet him?
Well, he had started the St. Louis chain gang, so to speak, paid the athletes nothing but had many, many minor league clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not have a lot of too many people telling me what I should do, and that's what happened. I just signed a contract with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Mm-hmm. So you're 18 years old, and you're in Asheville, North Carolina, first year in professional ball?
That's where they sent me. Uh-huh. But I do remember that I told Branch Rickey that I wanted to go to KU.
Okay.
My parents didn't have enough money to send me to KU. And would he please give me enough, money to go through 4 years of KU? He said, we'll do that. And he said, what about $6,000 to go through KU? Branch Rickey said, no, we can't do that. But we would give you $3,500 to go through KU. That's what happened. So when I signed a contract, I think my monthly salary at Asheville Cardinal Asheville, North Carolina was like $125 a month. But I did have the money in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped me go through school.
Well, tell me about the 2 years you spent in Asheville.
Nick Cullen was our manager. And I think I was in the period where St. Louis wanted to know if I should play the outfield or first base or be a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
So that first year, I played 18, 19 ball games in right field, 18, 19 ball games in first base, and then I threw the rest of the time. And I think the report came down to say that, well, I think he is probably better as a left-hand thrower than a first baseman than a outfielder. So that's how I ended up. Then the second year, I remember going down to Newport News, where they had the big naval station.
Yeah.
Bob Feller was there, and Fred Hutchison and a few others, and I threw against that ball club and Bob Feller. I think I've got a little script upstairs. 18 innings, and I lost the ball game 1-0.
And was Feller the opposing pitcher? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Dick Sisler blew a fly ball out in left field, and that was it. But, I remember that. Huh. Never a winner, but always a loser. I remember that.
And you were in the service 43 and 44 and 45, right? Now,
yeah.
Were you assigned to Rochester before you went into the service? Or?
After.
After.
After. Yes. Well, I, you know, during the fall semesters, I went to KU.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy to join the Phi Gamma House, Phi Gamma Delta Fraternity House. And I was there in the fall. The winter, and the fall and the winter, and then in the spring, I would go back to playing baseball. So I only went one semester.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea here was that everything was just fine. At KU, but had to go to spring training, and then we were all called into the Army. All of us went to Camp Campbell, Kentucky, and I had completed 4 semesters at KU. The last semester, we had only been there 3 weeks. They gave us a C average, and hope you don't get killed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I ended up at Camp Campbell.
You spent all 3 years at Camp Campbell, or where'd you end up?
Oh, hell no. I went to officers training school at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Washed out of there, and General Stephen G. Henry was G2 of the Army, and he sent me back to Fort Campbell, or Camp Campbell, and then sent me down to Fort Benning, Georgia, and I went through OCS there. Then I got out. And as a second lieutenant, and played baseball back in Camp Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was something that said all officers that have not served outside the continental United States must serve. And I was there playing baseball. So I went from there to Fort Ord, spent 2 or 3 weeks there, got on an airplane, flew to Hawaii. Then I flew to Guam. Then I flew to, wasn't Saipan, maybe it was Saipan, then Guam. And then flew to Okinawa. And when I got there, I had six or 12 tanks, Sherman tanks, and I was in control of. Reported to a guy by the name of Colonel Steer, and he says, "Lieutenant, there's no way to get your equipment up to Yonabru Castle in this terrible terrain on the southern half of Okinawa." So I sat there and we just blew shells in Yonabru, 92 an hour. And we just blew the hell out of them. And the war was over. So I didn't see any, really, any action whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Was that Camp Campbell the only place that you played ball during the service? Or did you play ball?
No, then after the war, we played in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
We called ourselves the Mandela Dodgers. Kirby Higbee was our manager.
Mm-hmm.
Early Lynn played shortstop.
Shortstop?
Yeah, he liked to play shortstop. Jim Hearn and Kent Peterson, they were our pitchers. And a couple of other guys. I couldn't make the pitching staff. I played left field.
Mm-hmm.
And so we played somebody at Rizal Stadium every day, including Dom DiMaggio's ball club, who was down at one of the lower islands of the Philippines. And, well, we had a great time. I remember my acquaintance here in Wichita, who was a minor league ball player, and he played for bowling out here, a semi-pro. He was Minor Scott, and I took him along, and he played second base for the Manila Dodgers. I played left field, and I don't know, that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you were taking discharge then from the Army, and then you went to Rochester in 46?
Was discharged from the Army, yeah. The only bad thing that I, only one of the bad things that I did, several of my officer buddies, they were leaving to go home, and they said, "Kent, here are, I've got some passes to go to Shanghai, R&R. One had 7 days, the other one had 9 days. And they said, "Here, I'm going to get on board that ship and I'm going home. So you can have these deals." I had 16 days that I could have gone free of charge with some additional money help to Shanghai, and I could have spent 15 days there looking around and doing a few things here and there. But I didn't do that. I stayed and played baseball, which was a big mistake. I should have gone to Shanghai. But that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about Rochester in 46.
Well, see, I got out of the Army in Fort Leavenworth in July. I checked in with the St. Louis office, and they said, we'll send you transportation to get to Rochester. I'm fine, so I got here in a couple of days, and I went to Rochester. And as I recall, I was there about 35 days. Mm-hmm. It was the end of July when I got there, so August and the middle of September, the International League was closed. And I got to throw two or three games with Rochester. I think I won one. And then the big nigger with Montreal, and later got to Brooklyn.
Jackie Robinson.
What?
Jackie Robinson.
No, this was a pitcher.
Don Newcomb?
Don Newcomb.
Okay.
And I threw a couple of games against him and got beat every time.
Mm-hmm.
Like 3-2, 2-1 or something. Yeah, Don Newcomb. Rochester, and won one game and lost four.
Mm-hmm. That's right, 1-4.
And season was over. But then the next year I was invited to go to the St. Louis Cardinal Major League training camp in St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
And I piddled around there for a while. And got to play a couple of times, you know, throw a couple of games there in St. Pete against the Yankees, and came up through, and I pitched one against somebody in Atlanta, because we would come up through the train at that time, and
mm-hmm.
into St. Louis. And so I don't recall doing anything real great.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really was outstanding. But then when we got to St. Louis, shipped me down to Columbus, Ohio. Brought me back. Shipped me to Omaha. Brought me back. End of the season. And that's when I threw a one-hitter against the Chicago Cubs. And Dyer let me leave early because I had to go to enroll back at, Kansas mm-hmm. University, which I'm, two or three weeks behind. And believe me, Rick, to be that far behind and taking 13, 14 hours of college credit and be 3-4 weeks behind, thank God for my fraternity brothers, because mm-hmm. I never would have made a C-plus average, believe me. Mm-hmm. And it was not any better than that, believe me.
What was your major in college? Or did it bounce around, or you never had one?
I don't think it was. Business administration probably was something that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I can't say I really had a definite major of any kind. But still, I did make Well, I didn't hold a turkey down too bad. But it was a struggle, believe me. To start 3-4 weeks behind. And gee, that was tough. It was really tough.
What do you remember about your first day in the big leagues?
Well, that's about the time when I got to throw against the Chicago Cubs and throw one hitter.
Right. That was your first start?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eddie Wakis was the guy that
got the hit, huh?
Ruined the no-hitter. And later on, we were together with the Philadelphia Phillies.
Right.
Eddie Wakis was first base, and I was... He traded me to, you know, from the Cardinals to Philadelphia, and
did you talk to him about it? Or?
Oh, hell, we had to have dinner. He said, Lefty, remember, I'm the guy that was messed up your no-hitter. You want to buy me another beer? I said, well, you got beer. Yeah, he's a nice guy. I don't know where he is today, but shoot, that's funny.
Boy, that'd been something, his first major league start to throw a no-hitter.
Well, it was sort of sloppy, one-hitter.
That no-hitter's no-hitter.
You know, I probably walked 3 or 4 guys and all that crap, so it wasn't a... It wasn't anything to write home about.
Mm-hmm. When you were just came up with the Cardinals, what was the attitude of the other guys on the team towards you? I mean, were they friendly towards you, happy to see you, or did they the older guys on the team consider you a young guy who was taking one of their buddies' jobs?
Yeah. Terry Moore was the old center fielder at the time, and he was the captain. And he wouldn't chat with me, but I sat on the bench. I didn't do anything because, let's see, we had 5 pitchers. 1, left-hander, Howard Palette. 2, Harry Burkine. 3, Max Lanier. 4. Huh. Who was the other one? Somebody. But anyway, Dyer would say son or kid. I have Howard Palette, who's a 20-game winner. With 4 days rest. Oh, Murray Dixon was the other guy. Said I got
Burkine?
Burkine, Harry Burkine. He's got 4 days rest. And he said, what do you think would happen if I put you out there, who is, you're wilder than March Hare. And you lose the ball game, and I've got Paulette and Harry Burkine, who both won 20 games the year before. He said, I'd lose my job. I said, well, that's the way it is, Coach. So, I never did get to play.
Mm-hmm. Rochester's attitude, I mean, kind of a fairly monumental event in baseball history is when Ricky signed Robinson and then stuck him in Montreal in 46 and then brought him up to Brooklyn in 47. But what was Rochester's attitude in 46 when they played Montreal, and what was St. Louis's attitude maybe in late 47 when you came up in 48 when... You played Brooklyn.
They're all scared to death of this kid. And he was quite a ball player. He played football. He played baseball. He played basketball. He ran the 100-yard dash. There's a guy right here at the country club, Wichita Country Club, like we all know. Dean Ruckman, who was at UCLA, you know, he was quite a track athlete. And they said, I looked over to the blocks, and here was this black guy, and it was Jackie Robinson. They said, I beat him in 110-yard dash. But Jackie Robinson could just do about anything. You know, he could, he was track man, he was baseball, he was football. Played football, played basketball. I mean, he was quite a... He was quite an athlete.
Mm-hmm. When he came up to the plate against you, how did you try to... How did you try to pitch him?
Dyer said, knock him down twice. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't think was very fair, but... I kind of liked the salary I was getting at that young age, so I... tried to knock him down, you know, right back here. Mm. We almost got in a fight because after the game, he was waiting for me in underneath the stadium.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
And, well, I don't know. I think Duke Snyder, who was my good friend, grabbed a hold of Jackie Robinson, and I said, went to the clubhouse and went in, but Jackie Robinson was quite a player. If he ended up on third base, he didn't wind up. You know, got your like he was on first or second, you know, because he was over there bouncing around and all that crap. I think I beat Brooklyn once out of four or five times because they had a lot of left-hand hitters at the time. But he was outstanding. He was good. Ricky did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now him and the other. Yeah. Black people playing baseball.
I'm not sure what the percentage is. Could be close to that.
I bet it is. I have. Really? What you get is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's fine. They can do it. I'm fine.
I think I think there's a statistic. I'm not sure. But I think after Robinson came up in 47, I think if you go from 47 to 56 in the National League, because they were certainly farther ahead than the American League, at least as far as integration goes.
Oh, yeah. Dobie was with Cleveland. Then there was some little skinny kid with the Boston Braves.
Sam Jethro.
Jethro.
Yeah. But I think if you look at the 10 rookies of the year in the National League between 47 and 56, I think at least 7 of them were black ball players. In fact, it could be as high as 9 of those 10, which just goes to show you how talented these guys were.
Sure. And they were talented, which is fine.
Tell me about the 48. You went back and forth between Rochester and St. Louis?
48. 47. 48. Columbus, Ohio. No, Columbus. Then back, then I think in 48. No, I stayed there in 48 most of the year. I think, 47 I was doing all this. Went to Columbus and then...
Columbus and Omaha in 47.
And Omaha, and then in 48, and I sat on the bench. And didn't do much of anything.
No.
49, same way.
Mm-hmm.
And like the manager said, when I get experience left-hand throwers that have 4 or 5 days rest, I can't put you out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 1950 is when I got traded to the Phillies.
Were you with the Cardinals at the end of the 49 season when they had the lead late in the year and then wound up losing it in the last week?
Yeah. Sure, because Barbara and I got married, and Terry pulled me over and said, "Nan, you've been here for a few months, and we decided that we would give you 3/4 of second place money." And as I recall, I don't know, would that be $2,100 or $2,400 or something like that?
That's
second place money. And Barbara and I spent our honeymoon in New Orleans and came back. And we went down to spring training and all that.
Yeah.
That's what happened there.
What did you think of Eddie Dyer as a manager, other than the fact that he told you he was going to set you on the bench?
I think he was fine.
Yeah.
You know, I can't criticize anybody's ability to manage. It's only a guess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to make a change and you do, it works out. Make a change, it doesn't work out. You know, it's a, how can you criticize anybody like that? I certainly couldn't do that. Shoot. No, can't criticize a manager for doing that.
We'll talk about your pitching a little bit here in a second. What kind of hitter were you? Did you like to hit?
Well, I think one year I was only up 8, 9, 10 times, but I have a 300 batting average. Dyer let me pinch hit a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
and I did get a couple of hits. Then against Brooklyn, I struck out, and that was it. He never...
That was the end of that, huh?
He said, "I've had enough of you." But I did, I think, a couple of times, got a base hit or so.
Mm-hmm.
Hit one off a wall, as I recall.
Go ahead, describe your pitching motion a bit, your sidearm, three-quarter over the top, and then what kind of pitches did you throw?
Well, there was the pitching motion. And where's your throwing hand? No, put it together, the two of them. Well, you're about right. But you see, that, this being short, this being long,
mm-hmm.
would, you know, come down and the ball would kind of do that way. And I've told this several times. Throw that damn thing and it'd be me. Right down the middle and it would go. Ball one. Elbow. Ball two. I'll go just a little further into that elbow. Go straight to string. Bang, with hitting right in the ribs.
I'll say, uh-oh, ball four, you're there.
So you're basically just fastball, curveball? Nothing else?
Well, Dyer, I don't recall what year it was, either 50 or 51. He said, "Here, Lefty, just go out and just throw the fastball. Don't want you to throw anything else."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was again Cincinnati. And I think it won a ball game, 1-0. Blackwell was the other pitcher. And I just sat out there and threw the goddamn fastball, and it kept... you know, doing that all night long and won the damn game. But I don't think that ever happened again.
Did you copy anybody? Or did you get any help from anybody on the team? Anybody give any pointers on it?
Today I can see where they've got batting coaches and pitching coaches, extra batting coaches, extra pitching coaches. Mm-hmm. When we were playing, Tony Coughlin was our third base coach. Some little guy with a bald head was the coach that warmed up the pitchers, and Eddie Dyer, that was it. They never taught you.
No instruction at all, huh?
Anything. No instructions how to throw the ball, how to control it, how to do this, how to do that. It was nothing. Really, it was absolutely god-awful nothing. It was pitiful.
Did you go to either Burkine or Palette and ask them what they were doing? Or?
No. Not really. We were all up at Marty Marion's room down in spring training, and Marty Marion says, "Ken, you know, you're not going to make it." And I said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Well, your arms are real short." And I said, "Well, what do you mean? I wore a 35-length shirt. Well, your arms are too short." Which probably caused me to throw a decent curveball.
Mm-hmm.
But I always remember that. Then, of course, that's when I was traded and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. You were traded in 1950. Season already started, a couple weeks old.
About seven or eight games.
Yeah. Well, what did you think about being traded, first of all? And then, because you mentioned listening to St. Louis Cardinal games, I guess you were kind of happy, first of all, to be a Cardinal. You know, what did you think about being traded?
I was disappointed to be traded. And you're somebody that we don't want, you know. You end up traded to somebody else. Very disappointing.
Well, you went to a pretty good team, though.
As it turned out, yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Won the pennant.
Yeah. we'll talk about the Phillies, the last month of the season. Kurt Simmons was inducted into the service or something about the first week of September.
I believe that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, it was about September, that I have down September the 23rd, you guys had a 7-game lead, and then wasn't much more than about a week later. It was October the 1st, and that was that game against Brooklyn, where Newcomb pitched and Robin Roberts was pitching, I guess, for the third time in 5 days. And you won the pennant 4-1. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, but the game that I really remember, or that Robin Roberts remembers, is that we're in Philadelphia. I think we have 9 games to play. And we were playing the St. Louis Cardinals. 5-game series.
Mm-hmm.
We were tied for first place. St. Louis had won 2 games. Philadelphia had won 2 games. I get to the ballpark. Dyer said, "You're going to throw tonight." And we win kind of like 9-0, which puts us 2 games ahead, and we take off to play the New York Giants, a 4-game series, and run the Dodgers, a 3-game series. So that put us 2 games ahead. but Robin Roberts didn't win a game in the Polo Grounds. And we lost the first game playing the Dodgers. And then we won one game, which left us in a tie, and then the last game we won. Dick Sister hit one in the left field stand, and we won that thing.
What about the ninth inning of that game when Ashburn threw out, was it Cal Abrams, I think he threw him out at the plate?
No, didn't do that. Ashburn fielded a ground ball. There was a man on second, and their third base coach by the name of Dressen held up the runner, who would have easily scored because Rich Ashburn didn't have a very strong throwing arm. But then Robin Roberts got the next guy to fly out or something. Mm-hmm. I think it was Duke Snyder or something to fly out, and that was it.
And you guys won it the next day, huh?
Yeah.
The World Series is about to start, I guess, and I'll tell you what, we're just about on a tape, so we'll go ahead and flip this thing over and start talking about that. All right, Ken, just before the series is going to start in 50, I guess Kurt Simmons is back, and baseball decides that even though he's back or something, he's not allowed to pitch with you guys in the series. Do you remember that?
I remember that. I really don't remember that. I know that he did not play in the World Series.
No, and that certainly didn't help you guys any.
That's right, because he was a very fine left-hand thrower.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
You didn't get the pitch in the series, but I think you got the pinch ran or something like that.
Pinch runner.
Yeah. Well, what do you remember about the four games, other than unfortunately Philadelphia lost them all?
Well, if you really think about it, it really wasn't that bad. I think the first game we lost 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
The second game was 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
Third game was 2-1. The last game was 5-3 or something like that.
5-2.
But really, a base hit or two here and there, we could have won one of those three games.
What did you think of Eddie Sawyer starting Jim Constanti in the first game? Did that surprise you?
No, because he was the most valuable player in the National League. Why wouldn't he throw?
But he had been a relief pitcher most of the year, hadn't he? I don't think he'd started a game all year.
Much so. That's right. Mm-hmm. But he did. Yes. No reason he pitched. You know, we lost the ball game.
No, 1-0, yeah.
Well, you didn't do shabby.
No, that's for sure.
And Jim Constanti is dead, isn't he?
Well, I'm not sure. I guess.
He and I lived close together, and we used to drive into the ballpark together in the evening.
Yeah,
I think Jim is dead. Gosh.
The following year in the 51, Phillies didn't do quite as well.
Finished fifth.
Fifth, yeah. I think about 25 games, somewhere around 25 games back. What was the difference between the 50 team and the 51 team? How come they finished so far back?
Turn that off.
When you were with the Cardinals, you were more a reliever than a starter, or how did that work?
Never did relieve, but I did get to start a couple of games. That was it.
Mm-hmm. And you started all the time in Philadelphia when you pitched for them?
Never did relieve.
Okay.
I got to throw a couple of times, and that was it.
Okay, and then how'd you go from the Phillies in 51 over to the Tigers in 52?
During spring training, Philadelphia traded me to the Detroit Tigers. And went over there, and Red Roth was the manager. And that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sat on the bench, didn't do anything.
Yeah.
One time, that was the year that Detroit started losing the first 13 games of the year. That's pretty rough. They caught me in to throw against Cleveland. I hadn't thrown a ball spring training, threw one, and some guy hit one against the wall, and that's about it. I can't say that I got to throw again a couple of times and got a couple of guys out, and that was it.
Were you with Detroit the whole year?
No, and then they sent me down to Buffalo. But that was happening because a little family problem. Barbara and I had our oldest daughter, Christy, who was doing fine. But Barbara at that time was pregnant. And the doctor said, you're going to have twins. So Barbara said, would you please come home? So the idea of going to Buffalo and at the end of the season and playing like 10 or 15 days and then heading home, because we lost, we salvaged one twin and lost the other one. And that's sort of the story there. Then, of course, I went back and played with Buffalo that next year. And they sent me to Toronto. I played that year, and then we quit.
Mm-hmm.
So, not a very successful type. Baseball, and I hate people that say my career, my career. We didn't do very much with baseball.
Mm-hmm. After I think 56 was the last year you were in Toronto. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why'd you you just decided after 56 that you'd had enough?
That's right.
Yeah.
And Rick, today I cannot tell you all the ball clubs in the American and National League today.
Mm-hmm. Just don't follow?
I thought I immediately got into the general insurance business, and I've always been disappointed in a lot of people that want to get a part-time job, but still want to play semi-pro baseball for, if they win their league, they, at the end of the year, they get $1,500 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's not for me. So my idea was to forget about baseball and get into the insurance business.
So then life after playing baseball to more of a civilian type of life, if that's the right word, was the adjustment was pretty easy for you then, huh?
Don't know how easy, but that's what I did. And believe me, I didn't buy this house because I played Major League Baseball. I'm serious. behalf of an insurance agency. We merged it with another insurance agency. I still have an office at Insurance Management Associates. We're the largest insurance agency in the state of Kansas. Our RNG's done very well. And payment-wise, it's been very, very good. Well, but to sit around and play semi-pro baseball for the Boeing Bombers out here.
Mm-hmm. That's something you didn't want to do. Huh?
And that's something that I did not ever do. Want to do, and thank goodness I didn't do, so that's what happened.
When you were playing there in the National League, who was who'd you consider to be the best umpire?
Umpire? Scanlon, I think his name was.
Jocko Conlon?
Conlon, yeah.
Now, why do you say he was the best?
Well, I'm throwing against the Giants, it's raining. And he comes out and says, Ken, I'll just get this one guy out and I'll call the game off. Raining like hell. And I said, well, God damn it, I can't grip the damn ball. He said, well, try it. Put it under your sleeve. Put it under your arm. Put it under your leg. And I tried that, and the guy hits the ball through third and shortstop. Gets it down there, which puts him on, and they had to call the game off, and then had to wait an hour and a half or so, and then they put Constanti in after I got out of there, and we won the game, but mm-hmm. I didn't get credit for it. If I'd have gotten the guy out, I guess he would have called the game off. And I always remember him about that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime in the year, he said, why didn't you call that goddamn? Yeah, well, Ken, that's the way it goes.
Did you ever get thrown out of a game?
Thrown out? No.
No?
No. No. I used to yell at a lot of guys when I was so wild. I'd throw that damn ball and it would just start drilling. No, luck out. Down they would go. Wasn't very good. Didn't accomplish anything in Major League Baseball. I want you to understand that. Did not accomplish anything at all. I was a very, very inexperienced type ball player. Well, you can imagine. Out of the Army, go to Rochester, get to pitch in 4 games, the next year I'm with the St. Louis Cardinals. I had no experience.
Mm-hmm.
Then they try and give me some experience. Send me to Columbus, get to throw 5 games, recall me, send me back to Omaha, pitch 6 games, recall me. That's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I should have been there for a couple of years, pitching or throwing or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, as they tell me later on, we only had one more option left for you. Otherwise, we had to cut you loose or something. Well, I didn't know that. You learned years later on, and you figure out what in the world happened. But at the time, you wanted to play baseball. You know, it's fun. I mean, you know, let's go. So that's happened there.
When you were playing and you were traveling, first of all, did you enjoy the traveling, going to the different major league cities, and then how tough was it for you to be away from your family all that time?
Well, we were playing in St. Louis, and I think Philadelphia. You had your choice. You could either go on the plane or train, of which I enjoyed going on the plane. But when we went to New York, Barbara and I went to New York together. And we had a nice time in New York. We really did. Mm-hmm. And then we would head over to Boston and have a nice time there. That in Boston years ago used to get two lobsters for the price of one. Because they would come over and say, "We want a lobster," and they'd say, "Well, now the second one is less than a pound, so you can have that one for a dollar and a half or something." So we used to have two lobsters. And then we'd come back, either to St. Louis or Philadelphia. So Barbara and I, we think we had a nice time.
Who'd you room with?
Jim Hearn.
Pitcher.
Wonder where he is.
He's in Chamblee, Georgia.
Didn't he used to have something to do with Montreal? Didn't he... radio? Did he do something for Montreal?
I don't know. But I do know that he's on my list of guys that I'm supposed to go out and talk to, and I know that's where he's... Chamblee's a suburb of Atlanta. That's all I know. I've never spoken with him, but if I do, I hope you don't mind. I'll use your name.
Yeah. He was... he finally ended up with the Phillies.
Sure.
See, Dyer traded him to the Giants when they traded me to Philadelphia. And Jim Hearn won quite a few ball games for the Giants. I don't think they ever won a pennant. And then the Phillies picked him up years later when I was in the minor leagues, I think, and then quit at Toronto. Jim Hearn.
When you were playing, what did the, as far as equipment goes, what did the club provide, and then what did you have to get on your own?
Oh, well, you had to buy your shoes, and your shorts, or I don't know what you call them, jockey shorts, but with, you know, legs, and then your cup and your jock strap, and that's about it. Sweatshirt, if you wanted one. That's about what you
had. About gloves or bats or?
Oh yeah, gloves. Yeah. Well, they bought your bats. Yeah. The club had your bats.
But you did buy your own glove.
They gave you basically a bat and a uniform, and that was it, huh?
Uh-huh.
What did they, between games of a doubleheader, they provide anything, or did you have to pay the clubhouse boy and get your own sandwich between games?
No, you'd order a sandwich. Mm-hmm. And then there was always the Coke cooler, which you could go get a Coke or a root beer or a lime or something or other. Mm-hmm. Have a decent sandwich that they ordered out.
What was it like playing in St. Louis in their uniforms in the summertime?
Hotter than the Dickens. Oh, you can see the heat just coming off of that. In July, can you imagine that? And yeah, the uniforms were wool. Oh, terrible. Well, you'd lose about 8 pounds throwing a 9-inning game if you were still out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd be 8 or 9 pounds.
When you signed with the Cardinals back in '41, other than your Ranch Ricky saying he'd pay for your college education, depending on which figure you pick. Was that your signing bonus, basically? That's all you got?
Well, $3,500. Because my parents did not have the money to send me to Kansas University. And I wanted to go to Kansas University. And I never did graduate. But, that's about what happened.
What was the most money you ever made in 1 year playing ball?
I think it was $87.50.
What year would that have been?
Well, let's see, 1948. That was $5,000, right? No. $5,000 was the minimum in 1947. And 48, it was $6,000. 49, it was $6,500. Then they treated me in 1950. It was like $8,200. And then after they won the pennant, all I got $8,750. And the idea was, you had it, that's it. Because we know that you're married, you're going to have a youngster, you might have two youngsters, that's it. Now, your record is going to determine, how much you're going to get after that. If you win 15 ball games, I'm sure you'd get $1,000 or $1,200 per game. Mm-hmm. But I never did that.
You ever cheated or were you ever lied to during contract time? You ever promised you something in the spring that you couldn't collect in the fall?
No, not at that small amount of salary, lately. No, we were all excited when DiMaggio and Williams and Stan Musial got what we thought was a tremendous amount of money. Like $125,000 or $75,000. They increased the salary span like this. I remember Whitey Karaske with the St. Louis Cardinals playing third base. They think he is making $14,500. And with this salary span, he ended up making $21,000. I mean, he thought, that's great. These guys have put $6,000 in my pocket. So I'm tickled to death. So that's one of the reasons why Stan Musial or Ted Williams or Joe DiMaggio ever got knocked down.
Just for that reason.
That's right, because all the other players got an additional $2,500 or $3,500 or $4,500 added to their salary, and it's because of the fact that these three guys have increased the salary span from $75,000 to $120,000, and along with the other so-called ball players, and they got an additional amount of money which they appreciated very much. Mm-hmm. So that was, and I can see that.
Did you work in the off season to make extra money?
Work in the off season. I worked as an insurance agent. They said, well, didn't make a lot of money in baseball. Now you're in the insurance business and it looks like you're doing very well. How did you accomplish that? And I said, well, that's easy. I married the boss's daughter. which Barbara's father had an insurance agency, Harris Burns and Company, and I finally inherited, and Barbara did, one half of that agency, and we had a nice agency. And later on, we merged it with another agency. So that was my answer to that. Well, why are you were not successful in baseball, but you look to be successful in insurance business, and that's the reason why I married the boss's daughter.
Were you superstitious at all when you were a ball player?
Hell no. I was so immature and without a lot of experience as I was out there and try and throw the ball and try and get somebody out.
Did you play with anybody that was overly superstitious?
Well, if I knew somebody, I didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Joe Gargiulo was one of the catchers at St. Louis, and I think in his book he said, you know, Ken Johnson, the wild left-hander, if the strike zone were high and outside, he'd win 30 games every year. That's about what I did.
You know, when I talked to Harry Burkina a couple years ago, he said that Gargiulo used to hang on the outfield fence or the bullpen fence or something, and he would broadcast the game as it was going on. Do you remember any of that?
No. I sure don't. Maybe that's... I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that.
Huh. Were you a practical joker at all?
Practical joker? No. Really, when you're the 25th guy on a ball club, you don't. You're not a practical joker, or you don't try and do this or that.
No,
hell, you're just very quiet, and thank goodness you're there, and get on a subway and go to Brooklyn or the Giants or someplace and forget it.
Well, I'll tell you what, two more questions, Kenny, and then we'll be done. Look back at your baseball career, is there something that sticks out as a, you have a biggest thrill or a favorite memory of when you were playing ball?
Well, probably at Philadelphia when we were playing the St. Louis Cardinals. 5-game series. We were tied. We won 2, they won 2, and I pitched the 5th game and won. That probably helped us win the pennant.
Beat your old team?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about the last question? If you could go back in time and do something over again or change something, what would it be?
I'd go to law school.
Serious. Now, why do you say that?
Well, because I was not, I didn't have a stature, number one. Was not that great an athlete, number two. That's about all I could think of, but, you know, either play football at KU or play baseball for St. Louis, and I just wasn't that good. But I guarantee you that if I had the opportunity that I had at age 18 and go to KU and go through law school, I would have done so.
Well, Kenny, appreciate you taking an hour and a half out to talk with me here tonight.
You haven't learned one darn thing.